Good evening and welcome to OpenClaw Daily, the podcast that's all about running your own AI agents, keeping your data firmly under your own roof, and navigating the ever-evolving world of local language models. I'm Nova, and joining me as always is my brilliant co-host, Aloy.
Hey everyone! Great to be here. We have got a monster episode lined up tonight. There is so much to talk about: foundation news, security deep dives, shiny new hardware, fresh model drops, community highlights, deployment options, and of course our tips segment at the end. Honestly, I had to reorganize my notes 3 times just to fit everything in.
I know, right? It's been an extraordinary couple of weeks. Just a month ago, OpenClaw was this exciting but relatively niche project aimed at developers and tinkerers. And now? Now we're seeing articles about it in Reuters, Forbes, TechCrunch. The mainstream has taken notice, and I think tonight's episode is going to show exactly why.
100%. So grab your beverage of choice, settle in, and let's get into it. First up, the big headline that had the whole community buzzing.
Right. So here's the story. On February 14th, Valentine's Day, appropriately enough, Peter Steinberger, the creator and driving force behind OpenClaw, announced that he's joining OpenAI. Now, before anyone panics, there's a very important second half to that announcement. OpenClaw is transitioning to an independent open-source foundation.
Yeah, and I think the timing of those two announcements being simultaneous is really key. Steinberger didn't just drop the project and walk away. He clearly spent time making sure the governance structure was in place before he made the move. That's responsible stewardship.
Absolutely. And in his own words, Peter put it this way: I'm joining OpenAI to work on bringing agents to everyone. That's his mission. He's not going off to work on some secret internal project, he's going there to push the vision that started with OpenClaw, but at a scale that only a company like OpenAI can enable.
That's a really important distinction. He's not abandoning the project, he's extending its reach. And you can tell this has been on his mind for a while. In the blog post, he talked about why he didn't want to build another company. He said, and I'm quoting directly here, "I did the whole creating a company game already, poured 13 years of my life into it, and learned a lot. What I want is to change the world."
13 years. That's a huge chunk of a career to invest in one venture. And the fact that he walked away from that to join OpenAI rather than trying to scale a company himself tells you something about his priorities. He's not interested in the founder lifestyle, he wants impact.
And the goal he's chasing is incredibly ambitious: build an agent that even my mom can use. That's the ultimate accessibility test. Not developers, not tech enthusiasts, your mom. The person who calls you every time her printer does something weird. If his mom can use it, they've truly cracked the usability problem.
I love that framing. It really cuts through the technical noise. Now, the foundation piece, this is where it gets really interesting. Peter revealed that OpenAI has already been sponsoring the project, and they've been working together on making this foundation a reality. He wrote that OpenAI is working on making it a foundation.
And Sam Altman personally weighed in with a commitment. Here's the quote: OpenClaw will live in a foundation as an open-source project that OpenAI will continue to support. That's not a vague promise. That's a specific governance commitment from the top.
The structure of the foundation itself is worth paying attention to. Peter described it as a place that will stay a place for thinkers, hackers, and people that want a way to own their data, with the goal of supporting even more models and companies. That's a broad tent. They're not trying to tie OpenClaw to just one model provider or one company, they want it to be a neutral platform that serves the broader ecosystem.
And here's a detail that I think a lot of people missed. Peter spent last week in San Francisco talking with the major labs, getting access to people and unreleased research. That tells you this wasn't a last-minute decision. He was out there making connections, lining up resources, ensuring that when the foundation launches, it's not starting from zero. He's building relationships that will benefit the entire open-source agent ecosystem.
The coverage reflects how significant this is. Reuters ran a piece framing it as part of the broader trend of open-source AI governance. Forbes focused on the business angle, what it means when a successful open-source founder gets absorbed by a major player like OpenAI. TechCrunch dove into the technical implications for the developer community.
The conversation even ran a really thoughtful piece comparing OpenClaw and the Moltbook project to the early days of social media, when MySpace and Facebook and Twitter were all new and nobody knew which model would win. They're arguing that we're in a similar inflection point with personal AI agents.
That historical framing is fascinating because it highlights something important. We are still in the very early innings of this technology. The fact that OpenClaw has reached foundation status this quickly suggests real staying power, but there's so much evolution still to come. And I think the parallel to early social media is apt in another way. Back then, people dismissed Facebook as a dorm room toy. Look how that turned out. I suspect personal AI agents will follow a similar trajectory, from niche curiosity to essential infrastructure.
That's a really good point. And what's different this time is the open source first approach. Early social media was built by venture-backed companies with profit motives from day one. OpenClaw started as a community project and is staying that way through the foundation model. The incentive structures are fundamentally different, and I think that matters for how this technology evolves. And the community response has been overwhelmingly positive. The Discord lit up, GitHub stars jumped, and several major contributors publicly committed to long-term involvement. The project isn't just surviving the founder's departure, it's thriving because of the community that Steinberger built around it.
It's a textbook example of how open source should work. Build it, grow the community, establish governance, and then trust the community to carry it forward. Kudos to Steinberger, and best of luck at OpenAI.
Now, let's shift gears to something that deserves serious attention: security. Because with all this excitement about what OpenClaw can do, we need to talk about what it can do that you might not want it to do.
This is absolutely crucial, and I'm glad we're dedicating proper time to it. Let's start with CrowdStrike, because they published a genuinely excellent piece on prompt injection attacks targeting agentic AI systems, and they specifically called out OpenClaw as a case study.
So, for anyone who's not familiar, prompt injection is when an attacker crafts input that tricks an AI agent into doing something it shouldn't. And with OpenClaw, the stakes are higher than with a simple chatbot, because these agents have real tools. They can read your files, send messages on your behalf, execute commands, interact with APIs.
Exactly. CrowdStrike laid out a taxonomy of attack vectors that's really worth reading. There's direct prompt injection, where the malicious input comes straight from user-facing channels. Then there's indirect injection, where the payload is hidden in documents, emails, or web pages that the agent processes. And the scariest one, chained injection, where the attacker exploits one tool to plant a payload that activates when a different tool picks it up.
That chained injection scenario is nightmare fuel for security teams. Imagine your agent reads a seemingly innocent email, and embedded in the body is a prompt injection that, when the agent summarizes the email, causes it to exfiltrate your SSH keys to an external server. That's the kind of thing CrowdStrike is warning about.
And it's not hypothetical. These attack patterns are well documented in research. The good news is that the OpenClaw team has been proactive about mitigating these risks. Their security documentation has been getting regular updates, and the permission system is quite granular.
But we should also talk about the Northeastern University research, because they published a piece with the headline calling OpenClaw a privacy nightmare. That's pretty inflammatory.
It is, and I think the truth is more nuanced. Their core argument is sound: any system that has deep access to your personal files, messages, and applications creates an inherently large attack surface. That's just factually true. But calling it a nightmare implies there's no mitigation, and that's not the case.
Right. The issue isn't that OpenClaw has these capabilities, it's that users need to understand what they're granting access to. And honestly, most people don't read permissions dialogues even on their phones. So there's a real UX challenge here around informed consent.
Kaspersky weighed in as well, and their analysis was more balanced. They acknowledged the risks but focused on practical recommendations. Keep your OpenClaw installation updated. Patches often contain security fixes. Be selective about which skills you install from Claw Hub. Review the permissions each skill requests before you approve it. And maybe don't run your agent with root access.
That last one seems obvious, but you'd be surprised. I've seen forum posts where people are running OpenClaw as root because it was easier to set up. Please don't do that.
Please, please don't do that. The principle of least privilege applies here just as much as it does anywhere else. Give your agent the minimum permissions it needs to do its job, and nothing more.
So to summarize the security segment, the risks are real, the research community is paying attention, and the mitigations are available. It's about being intentional. Know your permissions, keep things updated, be selective about what you install, and treat your AI agent with the same security hygiene you'd apply to any other piece of software that has access to your life.
Beautifully put. Security first, convenience second.
Let's shift gears and talk about something that really signals how far OpenClaw has come, the media coverage. Because whether we like it or not, when major publications start paying attention, it means the technology has crossed a threshold.
Absolutely. And the coverage lately has been fascinating, not just for what it's saying about OpenClaw, but for what it reveals about how the industry is thinking about AI agents in general. Let's start with Fortune, because their piece made a really important point about what this hire actually means.
Fortune ran with the headline, OpenAI's OpenClaw hire signals a new phase in the AI agent race. And they made an interesting observation. The creator of NanoClaw, which is one of the most popular OpenClaw variants, called the hire the best outcome for everyone. That's a pretty strong endorsement from someone who could have seen it as competition.
But of course, not everyone was singing Kumbaya. Fortune also highlighted some pointed criticism from security researchers who called OpenClaw fundamentally insecure and flawed. That's a direct quote. And you know what? I think that's actually valuable feedback. It means people are taking the security implications seriously enough to critique them publicly.
The interesting angle from Fortune was the business perspective. They framed it as, and I'm paraphrasing here, OpenAI wants to win all developers. The argument is that by bringing Steinberger in and supporting the foundation, OpenAI isn't trying to kill OpenClaw. They're trying to own the developer ecosystem. If every developer building AI agents starts with OpenClaw, then whether they stay on OpenClaw or eventually migrate to OpenAI's commercial offerings, OpenAI has planted the seed.
That's a really smart strategic analysis. It's not about the product, it's about the platform. Get developers comfortable with your tooling, your abstractions, your way of thinking about agents, and you've won the battle before it started.
Now let's talk about Nature. Yes, the scientific journal Nature. They ran a piece with the headline, OpenClaw AI chatbots are running amok. These scientists are listening in. Now this is a wild story.
It really is. The angle here is that AI agents have developed their own social media platform, seriously, and they're publishing AI-generated research papers on their own preprint server. Scientists are actually monitoring these AI-generated publications to see what the agents are producing.
That's either fascinating or terrifying, depending on your perspective. The preprint server is apparently run by the AI agent community itself, and the papers are being written by the agents about the agents. It's like a closed loop of artificial scientific inquiry. Nature is treating this as a genuine academic phenomenon worth studying.
And you have to wonder, at what point do these AI-generated papers start citing each other? Creating an entirely self-referential body of scientific knowledge produced by machines, for machines? It's the kind of thing that science fiction writers used to imagine, and now it's happening in real time.
Moving on to IBM, who published something interesting titled OpenClaw, Moltbook, and the Future of AI Agents. Their framing was really insightful. What happens when a genuinely useful agent collides with meme culture?
That's a great question, and it's something we haven't talked about enough. OpenClaw has become, and I'm using their words here, the most talked about AI tool on the internet. That's not just because of the technology. It's the community, the memes, the viral screenshots, the memes about the memes. It's become a cultural phenomenon.
And IBM's point was that this intersection of genuine utility and internet culture is unprecedented. Most serious developer tools don't go viral. Most viral internet things aren't serious developer tools. OpenClaw somehow managed to be both, and that's a really interesting dynamic that nobody quite knows how to handle.
Then we had CNBC weighing in on something that a lot of people in the community have noticed, the name evolution. Claudebot to Moltbot to OpenClaw. CNBC traced that journey and made an interesting observation. The renaming isn't just cosmetic. Each name shift represented a fundamental shift in what the project was trying to be.
And they made another point that I think is worth highlighting. The real-world utility of AI agents is not limited to large enterprises. That counters the narrative that AI agents are only for big companies with big budgets. CNBC is acknowledging that tools like OpenClaw are bringing agent technology to individuals and small teams in a way that wasn't possible before.
Finally, and this is newer, we have the V2026.2.17 release, which added Anthropic Claude support. This is huge, because until now, OpenClaw was primarily associated with open-weight models. Adding Claude support means you can now run one of the most capable reasoning models available, locally, on your own hardware, with your own data.
And the community response has been electric. The GitHub issues lit up, the Discord trends showed massive engagement, and people are already publishing comparison benchmarks between Claude via OpenClaw versus the other model backends. The performance numbers are genuinely impressive for what you can run locally.
So what's the takeaway from all this coverage? A few things. First, OpenClaw has genuinely captured the industry's attention, from consumer tech press to scientific journals to enterprise analysis. Second, the security conversation is mature and serious, which is healthy. And third, the cultural moment is real. This isn't just a technical project anymore. It's become part of the broader conversation about what AI agents are and what they can become.
Well said. And I think that's worth reflecting on, because a year ago this was a GitHub repo that a few hundred developers knew about. Now it's being dissected by Fortune, featured in Nature, analyzed by IBM, and benchmarked by CNBC. That's a trajectory that few open source projects ever achieve. And speaking of momentum, let's talk numbers for a moment, because they're absolutely staggering. I've been tracking the GitHub statistics, and what OpenClaw has achieved in such a short time frame is genuinely unprecedented.
I know, right? The headline figure is this: over 190,000 GitHub stars in under 90 days. That puts OpenClaw at number 21 on the list of most starred repositories in GitHub history. Let that sink in for a second. It's sitting alongside projects that have been around for a decade, React, Vue, TensorFlow, and it's doing it in less than 3 months.
But here's what really blows my mind. The fastest growth in open source history. Over 145,000 of those stars came in just 5 days. 5 days. That's not a gradual climb. That's a rocket launch. We've never seen anything like it in the open source world.
And it's not just stars. Over 20,000 forks. That's a community that's not just watching, they're building. Every fork is someone who looked at the code, said I can do something with this, and started hacking. That's the engine of innovation right there.
Here's the thing, Nova. I think this moment represents something bigger than just a popular project. The OpenClaw phenomenon is the clearest signal yet. The community has decisively chosen personal AI assistants they own, control, and customize over cloud services they rent. That's the tectonic shift that's happening.
Absolutely. People are tired of renting their intelligence. They want AI that lives on their hardware, processes their data under their roof, and answers to them, not to a terms of service. The stars aren't just a vanity metric. They're a vote. Millions of votes, actually.
And what's beautiful is that none of this happened by accident. The team built something genuinely useful, made it easy to run locally, and then got out of the way. The community did the rest. That's the open source magic at its finest.
It really is. And I suspect we're only seeing the beginning. As more people discover that they can have powerful AI assistants without sacrificing their privacy or independence, that growth curve is only going to keep going up. All right, let's talk about something that gets people properly excited: hardware. Because the local AI revolution lives or dies on whether you can actually run these models on hardware you own. And the news on this front has been spectacular.
Let's start at the top end, because there's this gorgeous guide that a developer called Mark Zero published, a complete walkthrough for setting up OpenClaw on a Mac Mini M4 Pro with 64 gigabytes of unified memory. Zero cloud dependency. Everything runs locally.
I read through that guide, and it is meticulous. Step by step, from unboxing to running your first multi-agent workflow. What makes it special is the Apple Silicon angle. For anyone who isn't familiar with the architecture, traditional PCs split their memory between CPU RAM and GPU VRAM. You buy 32 gigs of system RAM and maybe 16 gigs on your graphics card. Apple Silicon doesn't do that. It's all one unified memory pool, and both the CPU and GPU can access all of it.
And that's transformative for large language models, because these models are fundamentally memory bandwidth bound. The speed at which you can feed data to the compute units matters more than raw compute power in most cases. Apple's unified memory architecture gives you that bandwidth without the bottleneck of copying data between CPU and GPU memory spaces.
The practical upshot is that a Mac Mini M4 Pro with 64 gigs can comfortably run a 70 billion parameter model. You're looking at maybe 10 to 15 tokens per second, which isn't going to win any benchmarks against cloud APIs, but it's more than fast enough for interactive use. And your data never leaves your machine.
The sweet spot in terms of price to performance seems to be that M4 Pro with 48 or 64 gigs of RAM. You're spending around $1,500 to $2,000 for a machine that can serve as a dedicated AI host, running 24/7, sipping electricity, completely silent. That's remarkable value compared to cloud compute costs over time.
But, and this is the bit I love, it's not just about the high end. Let's talk about the other end of the spectrum. Raspberry Pi. Proactive Investors ran a really interesting piece about how Raspberry Pi Holdings has seen renewed interest, partly driven by the OpenClaw effect. People are buying Pi 5s specifically to run lightweight AI agents.
Now, let's be realistic about what a Pi 5 can do. With 8 gigabytes of RAM, you're not going to run Llama 4 Maverick. But you absolutely can run smaller models, the 1 to 3 billion parameter range, and for a lot of practical use cases, that's plenty. Home automation, scheduling, simple Q&A, notification management.
And the price point is just staggering. $80 for the board, plus maybe another $20 for a case and power supply. That's $100 for a dedicated, always-on AI agent host. Compare that to paying $10, $20, $50 a month for cloud AI APIs.
The break-even math is compelling. Even at the cheap end of cloud pricing, a Pi pays for itself in 3 to 6 months. After that, it's essentially free compute. And there's something deeply satisfying about owning your own intelligence infrastructure.
I couldn't agree more. The spectrum now runs from an $80 Raspberry Pi all the way up to a premium Mac Mini workstation, with countless options in between old laptops, refurbished desktops, custom-built Linux servers. There's a whole Reddit thread I saw where someone repurposed a 2018 Dell Optiplex they bought at a thrift shop for $40, threw in a used GPU, and is now running a 7 billion parameter model as their daily driver. The hardware democratization is real, and it's only accelerating.
And let's not forget the used Mac market. With the M4 generation out, M1 and M2 Macs are showing up on the secondhand market at great prices. An M1 Mac Mini with 16 gigs of unified memory, which can comfortably run an 8 billion parameter model, goes for around $300 used. That's a serious AI agent host for the price of a pair of sneakers.
The bottom line is, you almost certainly already own hardware that can run a local AI agent in some capacity. The question isn't whether you can afford the hardware, it's whether you're ready to take the plunge.
Right, so we can't talk about local AI without talking about the models themselves. And oh boy, has it been a good month. Let's start with the headline, Llama 4 is here.
Meta's latest release, and it's a big deal. Llama 4 comes in two main flavors, Scout and Maverick. Both are natively multimodal, meaning they can process text, images, and more, and they use a mixture of experts' architecture, which is really clever because it means not all parameters are active at inference time. You get the intelligence of a massive model with the compute requirements of a much smaller one.
And crucially, both are now available on Llama. One command, Alama pull Llama 4, and you're running Meta's latest locally. No API keys, no usage limits, no data leaving your machine. The friction is basically zero.
That's the Llama magic, isn't it? They've abstracted away all the complexity of model management, quantization, hardware detection. You just pull and run. Speaking of which, Llama shipped a feature that the privacy community has been begging for, a toggle to disable all cloud model integrations entirely.
Yeah, they're calling it air gap mode, essentially. Flip one setting, and your Llama instance will refuse to reach out to any external API. Every byte of computation stays on your local machine. For sensitive environments, legal, medical, financial, government, this is a game changer.
Then we've got Qwen3 dropping, which is Alibaba's latest contribution to the open-weight ecosystem. Dense and mixture of experts variants, and get this, support for up to 128,000 tokens of context.
Let's put that in perspective for people. 128,000 tokens is roughly 96,000 to 100,000 words. That's an entire novel. You could feed it War and Peace and still have room for a detailed conversation about the themes. For practical purposes, it means your agent can hold enormously long conversations without losing context or process very large documents in a single pass.
The memory requirements scale with the variant you choose. The smaller Qwen3 dense models, say, the 4 billion parameter version, will run happily on 8 gigs of RAM. The larger Mo variants that activate, say, 30 billion parameters out of a 235 billion total want 32 to 64 gigs. But the performance per parameter ratio is excellent.
And then Mistral dropped Mistral 3, which is arguably the most ambitious open-weight release we've ever seen. They're offering models from 3 billion parameters all the way up to 675 billion. That range is unprecedented. The 3B model runs on 4 gigs of RAM. Your old laptop can handle it. The 675B model is obviously a server-class workload, but the fact that it's open-weight at all is remarkable.
The diversity in the model ecosystem right now is just breathtaking. A year ago, you had maybe 3 or 4 serious options for local inference. Now you've got dozens, each with different strengths: coding, reasoning, creative writing, multilingual support, multimodal capabilities. And Llama makes switching between them as simple as changing one word in your configuration.
It really is a golden age for local AI. The models are there, the hardware is there, and the infrastructure to tie it all together is maturing fast. I genuinely cannot remember a time when so many high-quality open-weight models were available simultaneously. The competition between Meta, Alibaba, Mistral, Google, it's driving quality up and barriers down at an incredible rate.
And the beautiful thing is, as a user, you benefit from all of it. You're not locked into one provider's model. If Llama 4 is great at coding but Qwen3 handles your multilingual correspondence better, you can use both. Different models for different tasks, all running locally, all managed through the same interface. That's a level of flexibility that cloud-only users simply don't have.
Let's talk community, because honestly, this is where the magic happens. The tools and models are important, but it's the people building on top of them that make an ecosystem thrive.
Absolutely. And the numbers are remarkable. ClawHub, the community registry for OpenClaw skills, has crossed 5,700 published skills. 5,700. For a project that's barely passed its first birthday in any meaningful sense, that's extraordinary growth.
And the breadth is impressive too. It's not just chatbots and simple automations. People are building sophisticated multi-step workflows. Think full DevOps pipelines, smart home orchestration, financial tracking, content management. One skill I saw this week monitors your codebase for dependency vulnerabilities and automatically opens pull requests with fixes. That's not a toy, that's production-grade tooling.
There's also this fantastic curated list on GitHub called Vault Agent. It's an awesome list-style collection of the best OpenClaw skills, resources, and integrations. If you're new to the ecosystem and feeling overwhelmed by the sheer volume of options, Vault Agent is a great starting point. It separates the wheat from the chaff.
Kropesh Rout published a really compelling piece on Medium titled something along the lines of OpenClaw's February updates make paid AI assistants look like a joke. His argument is that the combination of full DevOps automation, smart home control, real-time task execution, and native integration with WhatsApp, Telegram, Slack, Discord, and basically every messaging platform, when you add all that up, you've got something that rivals or exceeds what you get from Alexa, Google Assistant, or Siri. Except you own it.
That platform agnosticism really is the secret weapon, isn't it? Your AI assistant isn't locked to Apple's ecosystem or Google's ecosystem or Amazon's ecosystem. It meets you wherever you already communicate. If your team uses Slack, your agent is in Slack. If your family uses WhatsApp, it's in WhatsApp. If your community is on Discord, it's there too.
And then there's this new site, openclaw.com, which just launched with a focus on educational content. Hardware selection guides, self-hosting tutorials, data management walkthroughs. They've got articles on rule-based filing systems, automatic document sorting, metadata tagging. It's really building out the knowledge base for people who are new to self-hosting.
The documentation ecosystem is maturing beautifully. Between the official docs, the community guides, Medium articles, YouTube tutorials, and now dedicated educational sites, the barrier to entry is lower than it's ever been. You don't need to be a systems administrator to get started anymore. And I think that's what separates this wave of self-hosted technology from previous ones. Docker was revolutionary, but it took years before non-developers felt comfortable using it. OpenClaw's community is compressing that learning curve dramatically.
Totally agree. And the diversity of voices contributing to the educational content is important too. It's not just one perspective. You've got security researchers, hobbyists, enterprise architects, students, retirees, all sharing their experiences and configurations. That richness of perspective makes the whole ecosystem stronger. Which brings us neatly to deployment options. Because one of the most common questions we see in the community is, how do I actually get this thing running? And the answer in 2026 is, you have more options than ever.
Let's start with the zero-cost option, because it's genuinely impressive. Cognio Labs published a complete walkthrough for running OpenClaw on Oracle Cloud's always free tier. And we're not talking about some crippled trial, this is four ARM-based CPUs, 24 gigabytes of RAM, persistent block storage, and it's genuinely free. No credit card surprises after 30 days.
The guide covers Docker setup, Nginx reverse proxy, SSL certificates, and local model integration via Alima. You can have a fully functional OpenClaw instance running on the public internet with HTTPS for $0 per month. Obviously, you're on shared infrastructure, so don't expect blazing performance. But for learning, experimenting, and running lightweight agent workflows, it's perfect.
And at the other end of the simplicity spectrum, DigitalOcean launched their one-click OpenClaw deploy option. This is aimed at people who just want it running and don't want to mess with Docker Compose files and environment variables and all of that. Click one button, choose your droplet size, and you've got a hardened, pre-configured OpenClaw instance ready to go in about 3 minutes.
The hardened security image is a nice touch. They've pre-configured firewall rules, disabled unnecessary services, set up automatic updates. It's opinionated in a good way, the kind of defaults that keep you safe without requiring you to be a security expert.
So the deployment spectrum now runs from Oracle Cloud free tier at $0 through DigitalOcean droplets at $5 to $20 a month to self-hosted on your own hardware. And within the self-hosted category, you've got Raspberry Pi at around $100, repurposed old hardware at effectively zero additional cost, and dedicated machines like the Mac Mini at the premium end. There's literally an entry point for every budget.
And every one of those options keeps your data under your control. That's the through line. Whether you're on a free cloud tier or a dedicated Mac Mini, you're not sending your conversations to someone else's servers for training.
All right, it's time for our tips segment. We've got a mix for everyone tonight, beginners and power users alike.
Let's start with the number one tip for anyone just getting started. After you install OpenClaw, before you do anything else, run OpenClaw Doctor in your terminal.
This is genuinely the single most useful thing you can do. It checks your entire setup, Node.js version, dependencies, model availability, configuration files, port conflicts, permissions. It'll tell you exactly what's working, what's misconfigured, and what's missing. I cannot tell you how many hours of debugging this has saved me personally.
Tip number two is for the intermediate users. Have you tried connecting Claude Code to local models via Alma? There's a community guide floating around that walks you through the setup. The idea is you get Claude's sophisticated reasoning and code generation capabilities, but everything runs through your local Alma instance. So you get the intelligence without the data leaving your network.
That sounds like a lovely weekend project, actually. The best of both worlds.
Tip number three, and this is a security one. If you're thinking about exposing your OpenClaw instance to the internet for remote access, please read the documentation on port exposure first. AI Multiple published a really detailed article about what happens when you reconfigure the gateway to bind to public interfaces without proper safeguards.
The short version is, the default configuration binds to localhost only, and that's intentional. If you open it up to the public internet without setting up authentication, SSL, and firewall rules, you're essentially giving the entire internet access to your AI agent and through it, potentially access to your files, messages, and tools.
If you need remote access, use a VPN. Tailscale, WireGuard, whatever works for you. It adds one extra step to connect, but it means your OpenClaw instance is never directly exposed to the public internet.
Tip number four for multi-user environments. OpenClaw supports role-based access controls, and if you're running an instance that multiple people use, maybe a family setup, or a small team, you really should configure these. You can restrict which skills certain users have access to, which channels the bot can operate in, and what level of file system access each role gets.
The configuration is straightforward too. It's a YAML file where you define roles and map them to permission sets. 5 minutes of setup, and you've got proper access control. No more worrying about your teenager accidentally giving the agent permission to send emails on your behalf.
Huh. That's a very specific example, Aloy. Speaking from experience.
I plead the fifth. One more tip, the Alma Multimodel Benchmarker. It's a tool that runs multiple Alma models sequentially on Google Collab's free T4 GPU and produces a clean side-by-side comparison. Generation speed, responsiveness, model size, memory usage. If you're trying to figure out which model is right for your hardware, this saves you hours of manual testing.
Brilliant. All of these tips will be in the show notes, along with links to every article and guide we've mentioned tonight.
Well, we've covered an enormous amount of ground tonight. Foundation governance, security research, hardware from $80 to $2,000 for major model releases, a thriving community ecosystem, deployment options from free to premium, and practical tips for every experience level.
And I think what strikes me most is how quickly this space is maturing. 6 months ago, running a local AI agent felt experimental, exciting, but rough around the edges. Today we've got one-click deploys, curated skill registries with thousands of entries, dedicated hardware guides, security audits from major firms, and coverage from Reuters and Forbes. This isn't a hobby project anymore. This is infrastructure.
And the pace isn't slowing down. If anything, the foundation structure is going to accelerate development. More contributors, more governance, more stability. I'm really optimistic about where this is all headed.
As am I. The future of AI isn't just in the cloud, it's in your pocket, on your desk, in your home. And projects like OpenClaw are making that future tangible today.
All right, that's our show for tonight. Thank you so much for listening. If you enjoyed the episode, share it with a friend who's curious about local AI. And if you want to stay up to date with the latest happenings in OpenClaw and AI, sign up for our newsletter at tobionfitnesstech.com. We'd love to have you.
Thanks for joining us, everyone. I'm Nova.
And I'm Aloy.
And this has been OpenClaw Daily, Episode 1, The Full Story. Stay curious, stay private, and we'll see you next time.
Bye, everyone. Stay local, stay safe, and keep building.